Chris, Phil, welcome back to the Cole Memo. How are we doing this morning?
Great. Good to be with you this morning, Cole and Phil.
Lovely. Always great to be here.
Yeah. Thank you both for joining me. Once again, I said it's this morning. Usually we talk at night. So thank you for giving me your morning. Folks, you're listening to the Cole Memo. I'm your host, Cole Preston. Every episode is released in audio, video, and transcript format. To find that, please just refer to the description of the episode that you're listening to now. Within that description, you should be able to find a link that will take you to our website, which will take you to a place which displays the transcript, audio, and video versions of that episode. If you're unable to locate that link, just take note of the episode number and visit thecolememo.com. From there, you can use our search functionality to find the corresponding episode, and then you'll be able to access the audio, video, and transcript version of this episode. You might also find any links that we referenced during this episode so that you might be able to do your own research. We're definitely going to be referencing some links today. If you're not listening to this episode of the Cole Memo on Patreon, you're listening to this episode a bit later than our patrons. To become a patron, go to thecolememo.com/patreon. It's a great way to support our show. Another way to support our show is at thecolememo.com/support. I just wanted to give a big thank you to Tom G. He's been giving me contributions lately at thecolememo.com/support. And Tom, if you're listening right now, I just wanted to personally thank you. The money is used to pay to keep the show going. The equipment costs a lot, hosting fees, travel, everything else. So if you're able to support us that way, it's appreciated. If you're not, one of the best ways to support our show is free. Subscribe to or follow the show. Leave us a positive review from wherever you're listening to us from. Favorite this episode, give it a thumbs up, leave a comment, or share it with your best friend. Your engagement and support is appreciated. Today is April 13th, 2024, almost to 420. Chris, Phil, once again, I just wanted to welcome you all back. And today, I thought it'd be interesting to talk about a recent press conference occurred. But before we do that, Chris, why don't you go ahead and reintroduce yourself to our audience?
Thanks, Cole. Hey, everybody. My name's Chris Berry. I'm the Chief of Operations for the Illinois Hemp Growers Association, which is a grassroots agricultural organization supporting the hemp industry in Illinois. We've been doing this since 2018, and we've learned a lot. And we're having a lobby day coming up next week, and we are advocating for broad legalization overall, we just want to emphasize that, it's best to be unified on these issues and to not have this infighting between cannabis and hemp. But yeah, anyway, I'm a farmer. I'm a millwright by trade. I work in engineering right now, and yeah, I guess I preface everything I say today by saying I'm not a lawyer, but I do have to deal with contract laws and technical documents all the time. So I've done some deep dives into research papers, legislation, and just in general, digging into, letters from the DEA, just whatever I could find to kind of support a more reasonable argument for all the issues that we're going to talk about today. And yeah, if you're curious about hemp in Illinois, please visit our website at illinoishga.com. And some of you probably know my wife Rachel Berry, who's the CEO of the Illinois Hemp Growers Association. She is currently speaking at NoCo today, so it's great to be out and be doing this at the same time. And yeah, just really happy to be here and to share everything I can share with your audience here, Cole.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And thank you for joining us. And that's what I always say about your group is that you are fighting for what I would call actual legalization. I've been told lately that I need to stop saying that we failed at legalizing because the lawmakers don't like to hear that. I don't know how else to characterize what we've done if criminalization continues in the state of Illinois. You say cannabis is legal, but people still go to jail for a variety of reasons. I don't, what am I supposed to say?
Yeah, and even when They say things like, it's not, there's no criminalization. It's like, yeah, it's technically correct. However, you know, there's massive fines that could come down on you for, you know, stupid little simple things that you might think are totally harmless. But in the, in Illinois state law, you've done something, you know, you've chosen to practice an unlicensed practice or whatever, you know, whatever it is. And that can get you in some serious trouble. And it can be as simple as, you know, maybe you tried some edibles and you didn't really like them, so you want to sell them to somebody because, you know, they're freaking expensive. And if you attempt to sell that to somebody, you may be in trouble. You're just trying to get rid of this, you know, $20 worth of gummies or whatever that you didn't really like. That could get you in trouble. And
Well,
that's
it's a
in no way
felony,
is
right?
that legally like in no way is that legalization. Sorry, Phil, what was that?
Yeah, like it's a felony, right? It's not like it's
Right.
like a business offense,
Yeah,
right?
it's not, yeah, it's no white collar crime. You're, yeah, they're treating you like you're, you know, slinging on the street. Yeah.
I always like to say, and I'm also not a lawyer, I'll say that right now, but the lawyers I've spoken to have indicated to me that the Cannabis Control Act of 1978 is the main enforcement mechanism for cannabis right now. And folks, if you can't put two and two together, a law that was written in 1978 isn't exactly up to today's standards. It is what created the graduated set of penalties that we were all familiar with before legalization, and this is important to acknowledge, we're all still exposed to after legalization. And that's kind of my point just going into all of this, is that criminalization is alive and well. And in fact, if you'd like to read or hear stories about victims of the continued criminalization that I've spoken to, I'm also going to start gathering stories and kind of putting them on a blotter sort of a display. You can go to thecolememo.com/isitlegal, because I'm always asking, is it legal? Anyways, today we'll be talking about kind of another layer of that, and maybe just some quick background, Chris, before we get into this, in case somebody's been living under a rock. Can you tell people just briefly how we got to where we are today? And what I'm looking for is like an explanation for how these hemp products came to be, so that we can then segue to this crackdown.
Sure, yeah. I mean, my understanding and my experience is in 2018 with the Farm Bill, there was a very specific definition given in the Farm Bill of what hemp is and what hemp is not. And what it is basically anything that you can get out of the plant besides Delta 9 THC. And what it is not is a controlled substance. They specifically exempted hemp from the Controlled Substances Act. So if you look up the Farm Bill, this is really easy to do. You get the full text of the Farm Bill and go all the way to the end. You'll see that there is an amendment to the Controlled Substances Act, literally at the end of the Farm Bill, that says that hemp is not a controlled substance. So any cannabinoids in hemp that occur in hemp are not controlled. Because of that, it opened up a massive opportunity for farmers and just regular people to jump in and say, "Hey, I've always wanted to do this. I love cannabis. I love hemp. I love, you know, plant medicine. I love growing things. I love agriculture. Let's go for it." And so, starting at about 2019, you start seeing products other than, you know, the classic CBD, which, you know, is still a very popular product, but a whole cornucopia of hemp-derived cannabinoids start filtering into all types of consumable products, from vapes to gummies and all the rest. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, it says except for tetrahydrocannabinols in hemp at the very last sentence. So beautiful. Anyway, yeah, so you have this whole cornucopia of cannabinoids that, you know, delta 8 THC, delta 10, you know, these they do occur naturally in the plant. They're not in what some people might call like commercially viable quantities or concentrations in the plant, but regardless, you know, the language is very clear in the Farm Bill that this is a agricultural commodity. And that it should not be regulated as a controlled substance. And that's kind of where why we're meeting up today is because there's you know there's been repeated pushes from essentially competitors in state licensed marijuana programs who are attempting to sort of lock down their market share by insisting that these hemp-derived cannabinoids, which are agricultural commodities and not controlled substances, that they must be regulated like a controlled substance at the state level, and that, you know, whatever federal law says, that doesn't matter. We want to bring hemp under the umbrella of our state level marijuana program, and we also want to make sure that any type of THC is part of our market share rather than the hemp market share. So that's why we're here today. We have another push coming through from another cannabis organization that's out there, that's been kind of pushing for this for a few years, and it's not just in Illinois, it's all around the country. Many states have gone through, you know, bans on various hemp cannabinoids, et cetera. And so that's it's been a struggle since ever since it came out. It's been controversial. People have been calling it a loophole. People have been calling it a gray area. People have called it the gray market. You know, all of these things. But you know, Cole had you had Rod Kite on recently, and it was an excellent podcast where he basically just says, you know, that's straight up wrong. It's just not true.
Right. And well, what is
like they
this
literally
man's a lawyer.
removed.
He's been doing he's been working on this for years.
Well,
And I
like
actually.
the most enlightening thing I heard him say in that interview was that they removed the word industrial from,
Right.
you know, like it
Thank
used
you.
to say industrial hemp, and someone removed that word. So like how much of a loophole really is it?
Oh yeah, you can tell. I mean, that
And they
language
added the
is.
whole language about isomers, salts, extracts, and everything else.
Yep, they knew exactly what they were doing, and it, that's that common narrative that you see out there. Maybe you're arguing with people about this in the cannabis industry, and they'll say the intention of Congress was to never make it so that you could get intoxicated off of hemp. And it's like, man, there's so much to unpack with that statement.
Yeah, there is a lot to unpack with that. I like to start with Mitch McConnell, the lead sponsor, like often referred to as the lead sponsor on that bill, didn't write it himself. Somebody else did. So, like we say, there was somebody in that room that knew it was going on, but they may have just been quiet about it. I love when people bring up the intent of the law because one could argue the intent of the Illinois cannabis law, based on the first few sentences from the CRTA, would be to give people, the police, the bandwidth to focus on violent and property crime, yet they continue to focus on simple possession and use. So if you want to talk about intent, it's like, okay, well, the intent of the cannabis law was supposedly to end the criminalization of cannabis,
Yeah, maybe
but
we
we're
should
not.
revisit that.
Right.
Close that loophole.
Yeah, that's a loophole that I'd be interested in closing. So
Close the loophole where like police can just randomly arrest you for having a sealed eighth in your glove box. Like,
yeah,
you
which
know?
you can read about at thecolememo.com/isitlegal. That actually happened. A sealed product.
Yeah, are they still trying to say it needs to be in your trunk or what?
Yeah, it needs to be odor proof, which is impossible.
So that's on the manufacturer, not really the consumer, but yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're not sold in odor proof
Well, and
containers yet. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it sounds like, I mean, pretty much anyone that winds up with that kind of charge also is just going to plea out in some way. So it's like, I just feel like it hasn't even been challenged because it's just, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like
It's like
someone's
when
got
you
to get
get.
arrested for this and like actually challenge it
Yeah.
because it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, if I had the freaking money, I would love to do it, but anyways, so yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary of how we got to where we are today. Thank you, Phil, for bringing up that, you know, industrial, 'cause that's part of this argument that, you know, this was never, you know, it goes into the idea of this was never the intent and this is the industrial hemp app. Do you consume industrial prod, you know? No. Industrial was dropped in the 2018 version of the Farm Bill. Industrial was only present, I guess, in the 2014 language, from what Rod Kite told us in episode 76. The other thing I just wanted to say to you, Chris, just to like add to what you said they want to control any version of THC. I would even take it a step further. They want to control all intoxicating cannabinoids, they say. You can have CBD, it's not fun.
Yeah, the like, yeah, they're, you hit it on the head there. They're essentially trying to monopolize what they call intoxication, right? Intoxication, it's always Intoxication is always mentioned. They might even say, they might even add more onto it, like,
Safety is always mentioned too. Not to cut off your point about intoxication, but it like they go hand in hand. It's all about safety and people getting intoxicated. That's what they on the face. I think it's good to start this whole conversation on its face is about safety. But if you just like peel the sticker off a little bit, you realize it's like, oh, this says limited licensing behind it. You know?
Yes.
So.
It yeah, definitely. Just focusing on that intoxicating word for a minute there, the
Yeah.
word intoxicant is also is always used but never really defined. And it's not really possible to define it. If you want to look at legal definitions again, I'm not a lawyer, but it's you're not going to have an easy time making a legal argument saying someone is intoxicated off of cannabinoids. It's just it's that's been a issue for the longest time, even before state level marijuana programs came into effect. If someone gets pulled over and they appear to be high, there's really no test for that. So to prove cannabis intoxication, it just doesn't really exist.
To
So
prove intoxication really is,
so
you know.
intoxicating doesn't seem to be enough anymore. So now they say things like dangerous synthetic
Right.
THC intoxicants.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's like conservative political commentators saying things like woke, radical, leftist, socialist. Like they're just trying to stack as many scary words on top of each other as they can to like elicit some kind of reaction. But the word intoxicating is it's not the right word to use, and they're still using it. In the end, I think it's going to crash into a brick wall if that's part of your, one of the main points of your argument is that people are getting intoxicated.
Yeah, it was like the main part of that press conference was all this fear mongering around intoxication and like even like that guy from the I have to bring him up because it just drove me so crazy. That guy from the
Dr.
medical
Friedman.
cannabis working group. Yeah. He's a doctor and he's up there telling some bullshit story about some 40 milligram cupcake that two of his friends split and were still high 2 days later. Like that's a lie. He's lying. That doesn't happen. No one is high for 48 hours on 20 milligrams of Delta 8.
Well, I think
That's
the point he was
insane.
trying to make was that you don't know how many milligrams are actually in it, and that it said 40 milligrams and they split it two ways, but maybe it
Even if
was
they ate,
400 or
even
maybe
if
it
it
was
was
4,000.
400, they still wouldn't be tied 2 days later.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. And also what I want to say about that story that was brought up, and I'm glad you brought it up, was two guys hanging out during the Super Bowl. Hey, let's try something new. Let's go down to that corner shop. Let's have some fun. Get a little crazy, and yeah, they got way what maybe they did get way more high than they intended to. But this is, it's not a convincing story to use to push for a ban. It's a great story about personal freedom. These guys were in the mood to do something out of the ordinary, and that's what they got. And that there's nothing wrong with that. There's no impact on their long-term health or anything like that. They just have this wild story now. That's personal freedom. That's great. That is a great story. I love that story. It is not a good story to push for banning anything.
No, well, yeah, it's just, I mean, how are we ever going to get things like mushrooms legalized if that's the standard for something that shouldn't be out in the wild? It's like some people are going to take too much and freak out. Like you just got to deal with it.
Yeah. Well said. Very well
And yeah,
said.
and
Yeah, that
that's
just
definitely a recurring theme, is children and just people in general are getting a hold of these things and taking way too much. And then they say they'll take it a step beyond that, which, that may be the case. People are dosing up more than they probably should, especially if they're first timers.
I mean,
They'll
people are experienced drinkers and they still will wind up on their knees throwing up outside of a bar.
Yeah, looks like
Yeah, every weekend. Yeah.
children was mentioned 11 times during this press conference. Kids was mentioned 8 times. I was just thinking about that because I was like, every time I heard the word that, I was just thinking, it was just interesting to me. Sorry, I cut off your point though, Phil.
No, that was a yeah, and those just you were showing that image of those 600 milligram bags of like literally counterfeit products, like things that aren't legal in it, like you'd get sued over that anyway.
Right.
Like those bags are just bullshit. like the stuff that's in them is probably just real Chips Ahoy, and someone is selling them to idiots with no THC in them at all. Because you can just buy that packaging like online.
Yeah. It's also interesting right here. You see this package right here? These are Mike Tyson bites. There are Mike Tyson branded products sold in Illinois dispensaries.
Funny.
Just saying.
Yeah, they protect the anonymity of the retailers who have these products, so that it becomes, you know, if you want to talk about gray areas, that's a gray area. Where are you getting these things? But yeah, the if you it, I don't know if you have a picture of it, but the picture of Tiffany Ingram holding up the two different bags of Fritos.
Yep.
And she's like, my daughter couldn't tell the difference between these two. I was
I actually
like,
plan to play that clip.
okay. I was like, man, is she okay? Because like
Let's watch that.
those two bags, like one of them, you can see the little perforation on the top where it's like meant to hang on a shelf. And you can see that the bag is like half the size of an actual like lunch size bag of Fritos. So
Yeah,
like
let's.
it's very obviously like a heavy duty like tinfoil package that is much, much smaller than your regular bag of chips.
Oh,
Yeah.
whoops.
You could see the one on the right. You don't even have to hold it up. Like at this point, you can already tell the one on the left is regular Fritos. The one on the right is the cannabinoid infused ones.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like I said, if you can't tell the difference between those two, you must be wearing a blindfold or something. Like even if I was wearing a blindfold and you put those two on the desk in front of me, I could feel my way out and be like, okay, this one is not actual Fritos. And just going way back to what something you said earlier, now that I've said that, you know, you were saying they removed industrial, and people are like, well, do you eat industrial products? Well, I would argue that you do. If you eat Fritos, that's produced in an industrial environment, right? It's a GMP environment, but it's a massive factory that creates those. I've worked in the food industry quite a bit. You know, Mars Chocolate and Wrigley and many, many others, Unilever. And yeah, it's very much industrial. All half More than half the stuff in your fridge comes out of a huge factory. So that whole industrial thing doesn't make any sense to me. But sorry to kind of go off the rails there and
Oh
circle
no,
back, but
it's all good.
yeah.
Let's play that moment real quick, and then yeah, I've got an interesting point that you just raised to bounce off of what you just raised about, you know, commercial and food and stuff like that, or industrial and food.
You know, over the last several years, there's been a proliferation of unregulated THC products. These products can be found in corner stores and gas stations and bakeries. And even unlicensed retailers that hold themselves out to be dispensaries. That's created a lot of consumer confusion. You know, however, things aren't what they seem. You know, this is case in point here. On one hand, they look like Fritos, right? Corn chips, these are corn chips. And the other contains 600 milligrams of Delta 8. I beg to differ, my daughter wouldn't be able to tell the difference. Which is extremely intoxicating.
So,
Terrifying.
extremely
But the
intoxicating.
problem is not that the little bag of chips has 600 milligrams in it and it's being sold in the corner store. The problem is that someone is ripping off Fritos branding
And if they were
and selling them
licensed, that
as
would not be allowed.
Fritos.
As
Yeah, the
ev
problem is
Yeah.
copyright infringement. There
Right.
is
And
no public health danger here.
I just wanted to say, to your point of copyright infringement, I apologize for jumping in the middle there. Chicago Sun-Times reported that Skittles maker Mars Wrigley was suing people a few years ago for infringing on, you know, calling their products Skittles. And in fact, it looks like some of the products that were on display are some of the ones they were targeting. Here's from the article. I'll show there were Skittles packaging just like this that were being on that desk. And here's, you know, Mars, this was from a federal lawsuit from Mars. So again, if they were licensed, I don't think these products would be allowed on the shelves because of copyright infringement and everything you have to go through as a licensed company. Let me just say before we go any further, my girlfriend works in a smoke shop. People get really upset when they go in there and the cookies bags aren't available so that they can't stuff their weed into the cookies bags and then sell it to people. It's not illegal to sell packaging.
Right.
from what I understand. Or at least it's really hard to enforce somebody just selling plastic with stickers on it, basically. So this is like a issue that I think you can only really wrangle if you keep it above board. If you push people under, they can do this. There's nothing stopping them from doing this, for lack of better words. So, this next point I think will open us up to an interesting discussion that I don't know has really been discussed in the media often, Chris, and I wanted to give you the opportunity. There's a study that's referred to, although not directly cited, as I think you pointed out to me before we went on air. And you've gone through the study, so maybe we can talk about it a little bit. Let's check out this clip.
Dispensaries can sell. Researchers have similar products found that there were, well over the legal limits of THC in the hemp products as dictated by federal law and contained things like heavy metals and lead. This is why Illinois needs to push pause on these products. And
So, what's this study you think she's referring to? Because she did, I don't believe she directly cited it.
yeah, as far as the part she was mentioning about THC levels being over the federal limit,
Yeah.
I'd love to know all of the studies that she's looking at. I'd be happy to review every single one. But the one that I found recently, and I think probably is informing a lot of the rhetoric that she's got here, yeah, is the one you've pulled up here by Jennifer Bash. Public safety risk of hemp products sold at unlicensed retailers. So, right in the name there, you can see that the agenda begins to be pushed. Unlicensed retailers, right? So these retailers do have a business license. When people say unlicensed, what they mean is, or unregulated, or what's
Or
the
when
other
they
one?
say untaxed.
Yeah, untaxed and untested is another one that they use. But when they say those things, it's spin, right? What they don't mean it's actually there's zero regulation or zero, any sort of applicable law to these people. What they mean is it's just not subject to the same regulations in the marijuana industry. So the first thing that I did was I read this paper all the way through, and then I was like, let's count how many times the author says unlicensed, untaxed, or untested in this paper. It's a four-page paper. There's not a whole lot of text here. They mention unlicensed, untaxed, or untested 41 times in the 4 pages of that paper. So like they're definitely pushing an agenda there. And if you would just bring up that paper again, it's something extremely, that just piqued my interest right away. It sounded like bullshit, essentially. If you go up to the very top where the author starts off saying children were hospitalized in serious and critical condition. Yes. So it's a quote.
Here it is. We're hospitalized and
Yes.
serious. Yeah.
Serious and critical condition, right? So critical condition. It's a very specific phrase that you use when you're evaluating someone's medical condition in a hospital. Critical condition means it's an unstable state resulting from severe illness or injury where the patient's vital signs and other symptoms indicate a significant risk of death. Okay? So the no one was anywhere close to death from the incident that she's mentioning in that source, number one. And if you actually go to that source, nowhere in that source does it say serious or critical condition.
I will say
So
I'm trying to find it right now. There is a news report, and this doesn't necessarily put down what you're saying, but there is one news report that I do remember using because I used it in Cannabis Industry Billionaire Part Two. Is a news reporter saying what too in critical? So he says that, but that doesn't
but
give her the
not in the source
right.
that's used by the author here.
Thank you.
So that article, I did download it and make sure that I have the full text of that article. And yeah, nowhere in there. What it does say is the child was very paranoid and delusional or something like that. Like it was like, okay, they were just scared. They took too much, right?
Right.
But n it's not anywhere near critical condition, right? Critical condition means they got the crash cart nearby. Like, this is not. So it's like, all right, very first paragraph of this paper, and in the beginning, in the introduction, you're already bending the truth. You're already choosing to emphasize certain things that sort of exaggerate the seriousness of the situation. And again, it's really bad academic practice to write a paper about cannabis or hemp when and not mention that you have a conflict of interest because you serve on the advisory board of Cresco. So even though you may not be paid, you may hold stock in other cannabis companies. I'm not suggesting, I haven't investigated any of that, but I would say that any scientist worth anything will straight up say in the paper, which there's no disclaimer in that paper, that they'll say, I am a member, or I'm a board member for a licensed cannabis company or a marijuana company, like that you're supposed to mention that. So anyway, I went through the whole paper, counted all the instances of, sort of this weasel language that's used. The paper itself, the key point of the paper is, yeah, they found some products that they didn't test or that didn't test for exactly the milligrams that they expected per serving. But also, if you look at the methodology in that paper, basically what they were doing was taking a 10 milligram sample of the object that they were testing. So they break off 0.01 grams of an edible and then tested it. Right? So they're not testing the whole edible. So like that methodology seems to me like you're kind of flirting with inaccuracy at that point, right? And even after that, they talk about there are many reasons why it could be inaccurate, including, a lack of full emulsification or whatever, full cohesiveness or what do they call it, like homogenization of the product itself. Like, yeah, we so you broke off like a tiny little crumb of a cookie and then tested that, and then you said, oh, the milligrams aren't accurate, and sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less, sometimes they can't detect anything at all. And it's like, well, shit, you can't detect anything at all, you literally broke a crumb off of it. Like, you anyway. Furthermore, at the end of that paper, it says, at the beginning of the paper, it says, the goal of this paper is to inform law enforcement and legislators and the public about the dangers and what to do. And then at the end of the paper, it says, none of this is validated and should be used for informational purposes only. Yeah. So if you look at the sources, there are no other source, like, there's no scientific sources here. It's literally just quoting news articles and legislation. So like it's not, and this if this is an example of the type of studies that in the recent press conference that we were watching, that they're using these as sort of their rallying cry, saying these products aren't safe, or they don't test as what they say on the label. It's like this type of stuff is it you're pushing an agenda with this. It doesn't seem convincing at all to me, that this is what you wave around when you say it's not safe. You're just assuming that people will see this, see that it looks official, see that it says toxicology on there, see that it's a scientist with 10 years experience or a researcher with 10 years experience, and then just think, oh, well, it must be true.
Well, is there
And
any? I wonder if
you
there's
get
any control. Like, did they do the same sort of tests on dispensary edibles? Because I've always heard the same thing to be said about dispensary edibles, that there is no uniformity, perhaps, and that sometimes people eat what they think is a 10 milligram piece, and then it's like 20. I know it's a small point, but I'm just bringing it up, as controls are important.
No, what they did the same thing that they did in the press conference. They grabbed a bunch of products from some dispensaries in Chicago because that's where they're located, and they said, we left them anonymous, or we didn't say where we bought them. We just labeled them with a number to maintain anonymity of the retailer. So yeah, each one's just numbered like Exhibit 10, Exhibit 12.
Well, okay. I just want to make a small point. It still doesn't, it's actually kind of underscores the point you made. I think it adds to your point. In the citation they made for the serious and critical. Serious is mentioned once in the article. It says suggesting a potentially serious condition.
Yeah, and that code red thing, that's another thing that doesn't exist. Code red means there's a fire.
Oh.
It doesn't mean that someone's dying or that it's related to their health condition. Code red, like
Yeah.
that's not, it's just not a thing.
But so this is just interesting because the study says five were in serious and critical condition. This says one was classified as, and then in this report though, this one I'm pretty sure says two were in critical condition. Again, I'm being, oh no, it does say one was in critical condition. I know I'm being nitpicky here, but like I felt like it added to your point that this, you would be led to believe that all five students were in serious and critical condition when really the report suggests one. Just wanted to say that. I feel like it adds to your point. So,
Yeah, I mean,
anyways.
if you're looking at an article from that's not from the source, it just adds confusion, right? So like the in the article that's sourced, there's no mention of that. It may be the author read that other article and said, well, this is just going on. Maybe they sourced the wrong source. But again, that just shows that like a lack of rigor as far as academic practice or scientific accuracy there. It just And it's irresponsible because people take that and run with it, right? And it's like it
Well, I
we
mean,
can't be using.
they were up there just fear-mongering in general. Like there was the instance she was talking about, like Delta 8. I don't remember. I think it was Tiffany Ingram was talking about Delta 8. And during the question, someone asked like if the licensed cannabis companies sell Delta 8. And the guy behind her, I don't know who he was, but he just shook his head. And it's like, well, that's a lie. They do sell Delta 8. Why are you like fear-mongering around Delta 8?
Yeah, I again, great point, Phil. You brought up something that I noticed as well. And
Can we play that moment real quick?
yeah, sure.
All right, let's watch that moment.
It would be the Department of Agriculture.
What makes regulating Delta 8 different than regulating cannabis the way that it is right now under state law?
So the person just asked, what makes regulating Delta 8 different than regulating cannabis right now at the state law?
So under state law currently, there is no regulation because they're operating under an unregulated space, right? It's just a virtue of the name, like the product that's created, right? So that's what we're trying to get our arms around.
Does the recreational industry also sell Delta 8?
The person just asked, does the recreational industry also sell Delta 8
Or
or similar
similar
products?
products?
I think I don't know quite how to answer that, but I do understand there's a lot of cross-pollination in these spaces because the
What does that
cannabis
mean?
industry is an extremely hard business to be in. I mean, it's still not federally legal. Taxes, especially in Illinois, are extremely high. So there are lots of operators, not necessarily in Illinois, that may be operating in both spaces to make ends meet until things change across the country.
I just want to say that the first place I ever tried Delta 8 was in an Illinois dispensary from Curaleaf, which is a member of Cannabis Business Association of Illinois.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I
So
was going to say is to
Delta
answer the
8,
question that
but just
CBAI
him,
could not, you say
like
yes.
him shaking his head and then her couching of that, it's like, no, the answer is just yes.
Yeah. Well said,
Like the
Phil.
licensed companies are doing it and they're also operating in the hemp space,
Yeah.
which they're trying to ban themselves and everyone else from doing so they can just revert to their licensed business.
Very well said.
Yeah, and then you're admitting that the taxes in the marijuana industry are way too high, and that
Yeah.
people will do anything to get around them.
She's literally making the case for hemp, which is pretty funny.
Yeah. I want to get this is really gets to the point of this press conference. I've got a few different quotes that say this exact thing that we should also watch, but this is just a short moment that I think is really gets to the core of this press conference.
We also want to protect the public health and maintain the integrity of our state's long fought for legal cannabis industry, which is undermined by these unregulated products. I'd now like to turn over.
Undermined by these unregulated products.
Yeah. Yes. the phrase that kept coming to mind when hearing this over and over again, and I'm really glad you brought this up, Cole. This is what I was thinking about this morning, before we started, was the phrase that comes up is sunk cost fallacy, right? That's to me, that's what this screams is, like, we put so much time and money into state marijuana, like, we can't abandon it. It's like, almost a year and a half ago, we gave some testimony at the Department of Ag, and I kind of suggested that this, like, I thought I was being really cheeky. Like, I was like being like almost too edgy to suggest that this is what the motivation behind this was. And now a year and some later, they're just straight up saying it. They're just saying, like, we have to protect our investments. I can't believe it. So it's sunk cost fallacy. And also it's purely special interest. Like, it's very much special interest politics here. Like, this is not reflecting the will of the majority. If this was an open referendum, they'd be out of business overnight, I think. But yeah, so sunk cost fallacy is clearly a major component of the agenda of SB 3926. And using public health as a rallying cry is a devious way to gain traction. And that seems to be what's going on here. It's really the only interpretation that I can see from this. And, you know, I don't own a business that sells hemp products at all. I don't sell any hemp products at all. I'm looking at this from the perspective of someone who is participating in it from an agricultural side. We want simplicity. We want minimal taxation, if any. And we just want clarity. And none of this is a step in that direction. And to make it so that, you know, the bill itself makes it so that it mandates the transfer of the highest value, highest demand sector of the hemp industry to basically, like they said, they want to put it on pause. They create a safety committee, which they mandate comes up with comprehensive regulation by January of 25. So, you know, in less than 8 months, they're going to come up with comprehensive regulation that the FDA could not produce in over 5 years. So the only way they could potentially do that is by straight up copy pasting the CRTA. And that's clearly what they're going to do. They're all going to be handpicked, right? It's not like these people are voted in, they're appointed. So you can appoint people who are CRTA workers, people who have had some hand in that bill or in that, you know, in that whole program. And that's what they're going to do. Come January, they will say, okay, these are our recommendations. Control A, control V on the CRTA. And you're going to, once that kicks in, then, you know, all the bill already defines all THC, Delta, anything that contains the letters THC to be marijuana. Like, that's the big takeaway from this is they're taking a bunch of naturally occurring hemp cannabinoids that are not controlled substances, and they are saying they are controlled substances, they are THC, right, and they are essentially marijuana, which is our what our whole program is based about. So come January 25, when they decide that all of this needs to be under CRTA, what's going to happen is only licensed marijuana operators will be able to sell anything that contains THC, because they already classified all this hemp stuff that's currently hemp stuff as THC, which then turns it into marijuana. So come January 25, if this bill passes, the only people that will be allowed to sell Delta 8 or anything else will be the marijuana license holders. So it's taking the highest value, highest demand segment of the hemp industry and mandating a massive transfer of wealth from the broad and equitable hemp industry to the select few license holders. And almost as a token gesture at the end of the legislation that they're pushing through this press conference, is 50 new licenses for processing, for, 50 new ones for dispensaries or something like that.
And dispensaries and infusers. Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a token gesture. It's like corporate social responsibility, right? Like Walmart makes like billions and billions, and then they donate $1 million, and everyone's like, "Oh, great job!" Like it's like the same thing. It's just anyway. Go on, Phil.
Well, and one of the crazier parts about the bill is the thing about limiting. I mean, it'll essentially just run all these hemp drink, like cannabis drink companies out of business. Like a lot of breweries have started doing it because, like, you know, breweries are down in like business, like 10 or 15%, I think lately. You know, they're trying to make that up with these cannabis beverages. And like you have companies like Binny's that are like selling cannabis beverages at the store, and that would not be happening anymore. Like that definitely seems like a step backward.
Oh yeah, definitely. They're the weaselly things that they're doing with the way they define things in this bill. It's going to cause all kinds of problems downstream with businesses that have made, like they said, they've made lots of investments. They want to protect their investment. There are people on the other side saying the exact same thing. So like, and probably more of them than there are of you.
More.
Now,
yes.
Maybe you have more money, but like she said in the press conference, she's like, they're operating in both spaces because they're just trying to make ends meet. And it's like, what, $65 an eighth and you're trying to make ends meet? Yeah, what is this?
We've talked to people that are licensed under the Cannabis Regulation and Tax Act that also operate in the hemp space. So, I mean, that adds a whole other layer. But I wanted to play this moment really quick because it added, you said that you kind of said this tongue in cheek a while ago, and now they're saying it out loud. Let's listen to them say it out loud. The person.
No, thank you for
that. Are you just trying to tamp down on competition?
That question. We don't want to clamp down on competition in the sense of like, if you want to sell hemp, a non-intoxicating product, you're welcome to sell that. But if you're wanting to, and I'll give you an example, I'll tell your story. I get tons of information from cannabis operators sending me pictures of billboards that say, come to my dispensary, we're without the tax. You have this gentleman here that's a principal that blood, sweat, and tears to get his business running, according to state law, licensed, taxed heavily, regulated heavily. It's not a competition, frankly. You know, it's basically a way to destroy the cannabis industry, frankly. Say more.
Somebody asked, legalizing it, what's the problem? They don't end up making their point. I don't know exactly what their point is, but
I loved that thing that she said, though, because I don't know exactly what she meant by so legalizing it was the problem, but I almost took that as so regulating and taxing it the way you did was the problem.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I guess if this was addressed at the federal level. Really quick, I just want to play what the guy said she was referring to, what he said, because he did say this is direct competition. So that's what he said. Let me play that.
And their eventual journey to being adults. One thing I do want to mention is my family, along with other talented people in the community, we went through a rigorous process to obtain our license to be a regulated state dispensary. In doing so, we spent thousands and thousands of dollars, a lot of time, and in doing so, we maintained the compliance to work with the state to make sure that the right products are on the right shelves. It is deeply disheartening and frankly a betrayal by the state to allow these shops to pop up and call themselves dispensaries. In fact, my shop is in direct competition with some of these shops that are allowed to sell synthesized THC intoxicated products, which are just as intoxicated as the products that we sell, but half the price, and unfortunately, without any type of compliance.
So yeah, he says.
Okay, so I feel bad for the guy, and like kudos to anyone for trying to get into the industry at the time. But it just reminds me, I read this article the other day, and I think you've had this guy on before, Cole, Stephen Philpott.
Yep.
So he's just saying, quoted in this article from Southside Weekly, somebody said, what's your background? Why didn't you apply for a dispensary license? Philpott said. But as soon as I read the application, I was like, oh, this is a hoax, because the price of applying alone was a barrier. It's like, You know, I'm sorry you couldn't see that this was going to be fucked for you from the get-go and that now you're really getting screwed over, but like, that's not hemp's problem. That's your and the state's problem. And maybe you should sue them for all the money you've lost or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and that whole idea, this, you know, I may not play these clips, but just if you're looking at my transcript, which I'll have linked in the podcast description, look up the phrase playing field, because a lot of people say there's an unlevel playing field. I want a level playing field. It would seem that a level playing field is hemp, especially with what they're talking about with all these, you know, they're talking about the fact that they are they're dealing with the uneven part. They're like acknowledging it, but they're like not wanting. Anyways, I'm getting lost in this thought.
One of the things that, going back to the original quote from the press conference, what she was saying was, you know, we don't want to clamp down on competition in the sense that if you want to sell hemp, a non-intoxicating product, you're welcome to sell that. So it's like it reminds me of the original Ford cars. They said the customer can have any color they want as long as it's black. And that's exactly like, that reminds me so much of what she said. There was like, you can sell all the hemp you want as long as it's CBD. And consumers are not going to go for it. I don't think, like, once you take things away, like I feel like that's what's happening here, is like, we're reducing consumer choice. We're reducing free market competition. We're reducing the quality by doing all of that. And, you know, a lot of what I do is related to quality, in many ways. That's what happens when you kill competition. It's like we have the high prices, but without the competition, you're still not getting good quality. And I think everybody would agree that the selection's not great and quality's not great. And the only way to make that better is competition. And like I said previously, it's just a step in the wrong direction.
Well, and accessibility isn't great. And the state hasn't done anything about delivery or like really increasing access for downstate. And the fact that you can order hemp products through the mail, like there are people that can't leave their house. There are people that don't have cars. you're just screwing over people who don't have more options, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a person like that, maybe I would say home grow is right for you, but if you can't get a medical card for whatever reason, maybe you can't afford it. Or you just, you know, you don't want to register your name on some list or something, which is totally within your rights. If you tried to grow one plant at your house, from seed to harvest under the SB 3926 that they're pushing through this press conference, you could be fined $10,000 a day for doing that. So if say you wanted to grow one plant in your house and you didn't have a license, but what you were doing was taking pictures and sharing them on like a private Facebook group or whatever social media that you share with your friends, you're sharing these pictures every day of the growth cycle of your plant. And by day 120, you're harvesting, and all of those pictures could be used as evidence against you to fine you $10,000 a day for 120 days of $1.2 million for growing one plant at your house. 3926 SB 3926 does like legally codify that as a possibility.
And there's stuff about seeds in here?
From seed to harvest. So I'd have to find this. Okay, here it is. It codifies a $10,000 per day fine for anyone who cultivates, processes, distributes, sells, or offers for sale cannabis
share your screen product, if you can.
Cannabis concentrates or cannabis flower without being licensed under this act. I am not going to share.
So wait, it's almost like, because now it's, I mean, they at least say that it's like a fine if it's less than five plants, but this is actually adding additional criminal penalties potentially to someone who's just growing a couple plants at home.
It's $10,000 a day for unlicensed cultivation
That's crazy.
In all regards.
So, okay. Some people say, in fact, that South Side Weekly article even said, kind of pairs Cannabis Business Association with being anti-home grow. It kind of adds to that, I feel a little bit.
Yeah, that's
But what you
insane.
can do if you want to find that in the bill, Cole, you can go to the bill and the full text of the bill and just search for the occurrences of the of 10,000. So if you type 10 comma 000, you'll find it.
I am looking it up, people. Let's show you how you can do this. Senate Bill 3926, sorry. We're
That's right.
looking, we're doing a control F of 10,000. Here we go. A fine of up to 10,000 for the third violation. This is something else, maybe. There's three occurrences. Anybody who
Yeah.
cultivates, processes, distributes, sells, or offers for sale cannabis, cannabis-infused products, cannabis concentrates, or cannabis flower. Yeah. That sounds
Without being
pretty
licensed under
open-ended.
the act.
Each day a person engages in unlicensed practice in violation of the provision of this section constitutes a separate offense.
That's where the $1.2 million comes from a 120-day grow.
Look at
Yes.
all these
So
people they give discretion to.
CBAI is advocating recriminalizing home grow
Well, it's
more
not
than it
what
already
they would
is,
say, and I
and your
mentioned this
penalty will
before.
be paid to IDFPR.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned before. It's technically not criminalized. It's just a huge fine.
Man, that's pretty
Whenever
good.
a person is
That's
convicted of an unlicensed activity under this act, it shall be the duty of the clerk of the court, which is a bunch of interesting stuff, people. Look this up. Senate Bill 3926, sponsored by Lightford, who I didn't see their face at the press conference. It may have been a busy day. And I know it was in the morning. I wanted to just play a moment here because I've never heard the cannabis industry described this way. This is interesting. Phil, listen to the words this individual says.
By establishing comprehensive regulations, we are not only protecting consumers, but also create a level playing field for businesses to compete in a fair and transparent market. It is a matter of public safety.
Have you ever heard the Illinois cannabis market, a fair and transparent market?
Transparent. The literally the ownership information in the state is confidential. How are you going to call it transparent?
That's thank you. I knew you'd glam onto those words.
I mean, they just, I wonder if they know what they're talking about, or if they just say these platitudes, just thinking like no one's gonna really question them.
Yeah.
I would say it's fair and transparent in that it's transparent that they want a lot of money, and it's fair that everybody has to pay it if they want to play.
It's so let's just because there was mention of that $10,000. It was a very short moment at the very end of the conference. I just want to cover that moment because it's interesting that not only you pointed it out, but a reporter had spotted it as well.
Benefits of, artificial or synthetic cannabinoids. We just don't know.
Oh,
And
by
so
the way,
we're like, right,
yeah, that's a
it
good.
does that. But then it also says, hey, and folks will say, hey, this is a ban, right? They'll say, oh, you're
Skip.
just, you want everything for yourself. That's not the case. We're saying that let smart people like this gentleman here study to see what may be the benefits of, artificial or synthetic cannabinoids. We just don't know. And
One
so
more
we're like,
question.
right now we're just saying, hey, you can just get this.
So I see in the bill there's a $10,000 civil penalty for each offense. That, though, as we know, means nothing if there's not actually going to be more people, going into these places. Do you think that is the responsibility supposed to fall on local law enforcement
This will be the
or?
last question. I'm getting signals.
Sure.
No, go ahead. Go
Well,
ahead.
is the responsibility supposed to fall on local law enforcement, or is the Department of Agriculture supposed to hire a bunch of new enforcement
So
teams?
she asks if it was too quiet, it does enforcement fall on, in agriculture? Does local law enforcement, like does Department of Ag need to get new agents? That type of question, in case you didn't hear it.
You clearly understand state processes. So it's an and, right? So, it empowers local law enforcement to be able to look into these things, right? Because it's really at the local level that you're seeing a lot of this stuff. But also the Department of Agriculture has the opportunity with the regulatory authority to actually go in. Right now they don't. They can't go in. Like they can go in.
So,
Yeah, I think it's interesting that they're saying that they need to go in, because you're deleting the industry. Like, if this passes tomorrow, everything has to be ripped off the shelf. So there would be nothing for enforcement to enforce. And then after that, it goes to the hands of the marijuana operators. So, like, they're already in there, right? So this is another problem I have with the bill in general, is it doesn't seem like it's cohesive. It seems like it's sort of a mishmash, and that if you follow one part of the bill, the other part of the bill doesn't make any sense anymore. And so there's a good example of this at the end of it, actually, where they go to amend the Industrial Hemp Act. That's the current Illinois law. And they refer, because they're doing squirrely things with the definition of hemp and THC, when they start amending the definition of hemp in the Industrial Hemp Act, it doesn't match the definition of hemp in 3926. And so when you try, and then they start adding in phrases like not intended for human or animal consumption for some reason, because they're not considering the feed aspect, the animal feed aspect of hemp. So it just becomes extremely
Wait, so are
convoluted.
you saying they're trying to make feed a licensed thing too
If
under the
you look at
CRTA?
the language of 3926, basically what it says is it sort of redefines what hemp is, and it says it's not intended for animal consumption. They're not considering that hemp can be used for animal feed at all. Like, it's clear that they're laser focused on cannabinoids, which is fine. That's all they do. But this is why the IHGAs exist, is to look at this from a sort of different point of view, and say, let's make something that makes sense for everybody. Hemp is not just this cannabinoid thing, and we have a pretty strong backing from the federal government on this. And yeah, one of the things that I wanted to mention about how they're saying it's a strategic pause. We need to let the smart people figure this out. So, it's been over 5 years since this started, and really technically hemp research started in 2014 with the 2014 Farm Bill. And a lack of research is on cannabinoid consumption of all kinds is, like, it's longstanding, it's well known, and it's ubiquitous across both hemp and cannabis industries. So to say that we just don't know, that never stopped them from pushing state level marijuana laws into place, right? That they did that even though the jury's still out, like the official jury's still out. If you ask the FDA, is cannabis safe, they'll say, well, we can't, it's not doesn't fit our framework at the time, so it could potentially be unsafe. And that's what they'll say. That's what they say about everything that's not GRAS. If it's being added to the variety of things that humans consume, and it's not GRAS, they say
Generally
this would be
recognized as
potential.
safe.
Yes, if it's not GRAS, they'll say this may potentially be unsafe. And then journalists and politicians and scientists take that and they run with it, and they say it's dangerous, it's synthetic, it's intoxicating, it's killing kids, it's putting people in critical condition in the hospital. And then they go and they quote the FDA, and all the FDA says is, it may potentially be unsafe.
We need a grass is grass campaign.
And that's what's interesting is that that's kind of like there was a lot of different reasons that the legalization movement started, but one of them was that cannabis is not dangerous and one might say generally recognized as safe, although not formally, I guess.
Well, certain aspects of the plant are GRAS, the seed part, and just recently they've and the hemp seed oil as well, anything that comes from the seed pretty much. But they just approved the meal, the cake that comes off. Like, when you press hemp seed to get all the oil out, you're left with this like thick, dense cake of like green matter. And you can take that and mill it like flour. And it was just approved to be added to the feed of laying hens, in an up to 20% concentration of whatever animal feed. So like 20% of all animal feed, and FDA approved this, FDA CBM, I think is the,
so we're going to be saying you can't, only cannabis licensed people can promulgate, for lack of better words, that
as it's written right now. Yes, that's what that's what it seems like.
At it the just end doesn't even bill. Seem like they would be in that business either, like calling Southern Illinois farmers like, hey, y'all need some feed, like, yo, you know, like I it just doesn't seem like their businesses are like angled to supply that demand, even the demand of consumers, let alone Phil, were you
No, well, I was just going to say, yeah, because it's like they're barely even cannabis companies. They're license acquisition companies, you know, and they just function on acquiring these limited licenses and then protecting that market.
Yeah. And I just have to say, you know, I have to bring this up. It's an old report I produced, but we have to remind ourselves like that the attitude inside of the government, you know, for in our Cannabis Regulation Oversight Office is that if the federal government closes the loophole, that not, this is a quote, 95% of our problems go away, end quote. Aaron Johnson mentioned that right now local law enforcement is reluctant to do anything due to hemp's federal legality. Aaron mentioned they would be reaching out to the Attorney General's office to see if there's, quote, anything they can do, end quote. Right now, there's not anything that they can do, like she said. But this bill, once again, the reason I played that, and if I could just say the quote, Tiffany Chapel Ingram said, this empowers local law enforcement to look into these things because it's really at the local level that you're seeing a lot of this stuff. But also, the Department of Agriculture has the opportunity with the regulatory authority to actually go in. Right now, they can't go in.
Doesn't it just seem weird too that the CROO is even like expressing opinions about hemp? Like, why does the CROO have an agenda? Shouldn't she just be regulating cannabis? And it just makes me extremely uncomfortable. Well, it just makes me uncomfortable too, because Tiffany Chapel Ingram used to work as the Deputy Cannabis Regulation Oversight Officer.
Right.
So it's like you have this, you know, you have this fireside chat between the two of them, and it's like, why are you guys like, why is the business advocacy group like colluding with the cannabis regulators office about hemp? It's just, it just seems not clean.
Yeah. And this one is not like it goes. Another thing that we haven't mentioned here, you know, last time we talked about this, we talked about bills from LaShawn Ford. And this one goes way further than that. Like, I think in somewhere in there, in the press conference, they were quoted as saying, you know, we respect LaShawn Ford's work, but we feel like his legislation didn't go far enough.
Right.
And this, the one that they've got now is much, much more restrictive. And I think another clever thing that they did with it was they didn't mention taxes at all. It's just implied in the background that like all of this revenue will be shifted to the state level marijuana program, where all of these products will be taxed at 20% or whatever, the same rates for flower, concentrate, et cetera. But nowhere in the bill is taxation mentioned at all, because they sort of shift that responsibility of figuring it out to the committee for a couple of months. And then they come back with, well, whatever the committee said, that's what we have to do. So this is a much more, I would say, devious effort in general. LaShawn Ford, at least, like, he put it out there trying to sort of meet in the middle and get those taxes. But this one is just like, shut it down, stop it, 100% transfer of wealth.
And those two bills are like this classic, like we were saying, it's like the license caps versus no license caps thing. They want to bring this all under the license cap structure. LaShawn Ford's bill didn't have caps, right?
And that's what they mean
to kind of get a hemp license.
I don't mean to speak for them, but I think that's what they mean when they say it doesn't go far enough, because they talk about all the money you have to put in to make the dispensary and all the regulations you have to comply with. And if you just give this head shop a license, well, what the hell, man? I think that's what they mean by it doesn't go far enough. To start.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say was, you know, the cannabis regulation oversight, that they just want to run the same program they have, and expand. Like, that's really all they're looking for is just an expansion of their budget, expansion of their ability to enforce, an expansion of their sort of bubble of influence over what they would consider, you know, intoxicating products in the state. And it to me, it's like the like you said earlier, Cole, or maybe it was you, Phil, you said they're the ones dealing with the difficulties. They're the ones dealing with the difficulties based on what they've created. And there's no reason for state bureaucracy to grow around this crop. It's an agricultural commodity. And at a certain point, like, it's going to have to be wiped out in some regard, right? Like, there's no way that this limited license system can last forever. And this is sort of just swimming upstream from the torrent of the torrent of support, nationwide support and interest behind hemp. To me, it's like there's no stopping it. And this is these are the struggles that we're seeing from the sort of next generation of prohibition or just protectionism, cronyism almost, I would say, that they're sort of getting into with the way you describe how the revolving door between cannabis organizations, cannabis advisory boards, and scientific, you know, research, and government. This sort of, one of the things, it's like, I'm not trying to say there's a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy. It's much more plain than that. There's enough people out there entrenched in positions of power to have their way with the market here. And that's kind of always been my joke. Like, what do you think about government? Well, it's like, well, they get to do all the cool stuff. They're the only ones who are allowed to sell drugs. They're the only ones who are allowed to sell guns. They're the only ones who are, you know, allowed to commit violence. Like, they get to do all the things that, citizens would be penalized for. Like, we have, the government has a monopoly on all of those things. And the CROO, I really don't think that they have a strong comprehension of, like, all of the things that are going on at the federal level with hemp and cannabis in general. They're definitely just focused on their bubble here in Illinois. We wrote a very lengthy response to there was a congressional RFI recently to probably four U.S. senators, I think. And one of them actually was Bernie Sanders. We wrote this 28-page RFI with all of the recommendations of how Congress should adopt rules and how FDA should create
what
regulations.
What is an RFI?
A request for information.
Okay.
So they issued a request for information through, like, you know, official communication from the U.S. government. They said, attention all people in the hemp industry, if you can answer these questions, please do. And it was an insane amount of questions. It took, like I said, it was a 28-page, like a thick 28-page paper about all of the things that they're concerned about, cannabinoids and everything all the way through, right? They have the full perspective on everything that's involved with this plant, with this crop that is hemp, and to see state level people in their bubble thinking that they can just hop in and sort of take a scoop out of that and just walk away with it, like, it just makes no sense to me. Like, there's so many people in the federal government working on this right now, and for you to step in and think that you can, you know, get in the way of that and protect whoever it is you're trying to protect indefinitely. It just, you've got another thing coming. And anyway, it's perfect timing for something like this to happen, because we are doing a lobby day next week And so we wrote up a fact sheet already, which is hilarious. We wrote up a fact sheet that has, among other things, four talking points on it, that say, we're going to request that all senators and representatives that we meet, table any bill that, attempts to redefine hemp, imposes any milligram caps, tries to ban any cannabinoids, or tries to create any new licenses. And this bill does all four. So we're basically going to just say, hey, there's a perfect example. This one is the quadfecta. It hits all four categories. This thing obviously needs to be tabled. When you table something, what you're saying is it's not even worth the consideration, like the debate. The debate shouldn't even exist here. Like, this is not a non-starter. There is no popular support for this. And if it does get any, and I know the Senate Majority Leader introduced this bill, I'm sure that it was very strategic and very important for their movement to have that happen. If it gets far enough to where we can start signing witness slips, we're happy to go in and testify, and we will bring everybody we know to come and testify, who's willing, if and when that ever happens. I don't think it will. I think this needs to be tabled. And I think it's, you know, we're going to meet with many agricultural committee members, both in the House Ag Committee and the Senate Ag Committee, next week on Wednesday. And we're going to give them this fact sheet. We're going to bring a large group of people with us, and we're going to split into teams, and we're going to visit as many reps and senators as we can, to leave them with this information, to leave them with this perspective, because in that press conference, you had a lot of representatives involved in that press conference. And mostly what they stepped up and said was, we need to protect our state program. And somebody please think of the children. Like, those are the main two points, I think, from all the reps. But yeah, they got a bunch of people to push that, but we're going to go meet a bunch of people who are actually the decision makers. Cause like right now this bill is sitting in assignments. So it needs to be assigned to, it's in a committee that assigns things to committees. And so they're going to assign it to an agricultural committee who, you know, that's who we're meeting next week. So this is, it's perfect timing. It's really easy to just come in and educate and say, look, there's so much controversy here. This is not even worth your time. This is, you know, there's too much.
It just seems bad for business too. Like, like bad for business in the state and agricultural business. And, you know, it just seems like it'll fuck over so many more people than it would help.
Definitely. Yeah. The hemp industry is broad and equitable, man. There are many more hemp businesses out there than there are, licensed marijuana businesses.
Yeah.
But it's also bad for business for reps too, for reps and senators, because if they vote yes, they're screwed. If they vote no, they're screwed. So if you table the bill, you don't have to do either one. That then it's just like, oh, we're too busy, we can't deal with this. And that's basically our strategy, is like, is this really that important? Is something this controversial really that important, when this has been an ongoing situation? It's been a public health emergency. You could see Bob Morgan standing in the background doing his same old thing. This is a public health emergency. This bill has an emergency authorization in it. It's been going, this is the eternal emergency that's been going on for years now. And, you know, people like Kelly Cassidy being quoted in the newspaper saying, someone's going to die. And it's like, nobody's died. Yeah. And it's just, I know that's kind of a shitty metric to say, well, nobody's died. Like, yeah, it's kind of a shitty metric, but when you got people out there, this is a representative out there screaming this and getting printed in the newspaper. It's just, what's your agenda here? Why are we doing this? And there's a lot of confusion out there about the legal status of these cannabinoids, like part of the confusion, like one of the things I wanted to mention, this is kind of like changing the subject here, was the confusion between, is Delta 8 synthetic and illegal, or is that Delta 8 THCO? And I seen the reporter who wrote that article in the Tribune made the mistake. And also at the end of the press conference, Mr. Lindsay made that mistake as well. So in the end of that press conference, what was his name? Chris Lindsay, American Trade Association for Cannabis and Hemp.
Mm-hmm.
What he says is, you'll hear from folks that sell products like this, and it's just to say, well, it's federally legal. And I got to tell you that if you ask somebody at the DEA what they think, they will very much disagree. And my response to that is, this is not factual. The speaker is confused. There is a signed letter from the DEA saying the exact opposite. And, you know, it's Terrence Booz is the man who signed it from the DEA. The confusion of the speaker is regarding DEA's position on Delta 8 THCO, which is an acetate ester, and Delta 10 THCO, which are both actually synthetic cannabinoids that never occur naturally in hemp. And it's easy. It's an easy mistake for someone to make, right? It's like, and the way that the information was reported, it was like, is Delta 8 illegal now? And when that story dropped the first day, we were like, what is all this confusion? It's not. We have like I said, I have two letters. I have one saying THCO, Delta 8 THCO is illegal. I have another one saying Delta 8 is hemp and therefore not a controlled substance.
That was like a big issue I had with this whole press conference, was it just seemed like they were presenting misinformation.
Whether or not
it was deliberate, it was false information.
Like I was saying, it's an easy mistake for somebody to make. However, it's irresponsible and devious to put it in print, to use it as leverage for your argument to push legislation like that. Though, if you're going to use it, make sure you got the facts straight. All right. This is just another one of those things like that. It's like the little chink in the armor, right? It's like you can unravel everything if you just pull on that one little thread. Go on, Cole. Sorry.
No, I thought it was a good time because we're talking about fear mongering and language. And it's always important to just briefly remind the tape and remind us of the language that got us here. This is when lawmakers agreed that we should legalize cannabis. And let's just listen to the language that was used just briefly. It's a very small clip. This is
Kelly Cassidy and I first introduced this bill over two years ago. I'd come to the conclusion that prohibition simply does not work. Nearly 800,000 Illinoisans use cannabis on a regular basis, with over 95% of those purchasing it in the illicit market. Too often we have unsafe products that are laced with rat poison and fentanyl. We hear about people dying from this. Teens report easy access for...
That's what I wanted to... Before legalization, I really never heard of cannabis laced with rat poison and fentanyl. So like from the very beginning, we've kind of been a little bit dishonest, I think. I just, you know, that's all there is to my point. And I apologize for jumping in because you were about to go somewhere else, I think, Chris. So.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was going to pull up those letters for you if you'd like to see them really quickly.
Yeah, sure.
There you go. Can you see this now?
Yep.
So this is the one from 2021, which is talking about Delta 8. And you can see it's signed by Terrence Booz. And this is the one that's talking about how Delta 8 is compliant hemp. So
even synthetically produced, it says.
Yes.
Take a moment to say that if we could just briefly, I'm sorry, but... You know, a lot of people, when we talk about this subject, they're like, I would never use Delta 8. And like, personally, I don't either. But I also don't believe that prohibition is an exercise that we should engage in. And I know that they might say, well, this isn't prohibition, Cole. This is $10,000 fines. All right. Well, I just think this is fruitless, like this exercise of trying to control molecules. And the best way to do it, like you can't stop the sale of molecules. You can only stop the safe sale of molecules. So like give people a chance to operate above board. I just had to say that because it's like, I'm not in the business either, Chris. You said that earlier. I'm not in the business, although I should, you know, very clearly clarify that because I recently did an April Fool's joke and a lot of people are still hitting me with like, you know, options to further my brand. I'm not in the business. I have no aspirations to be in the business. Again, I just think that the war on drugs or trying to control molecules is just a fruitless endeavor. that we should move on from. I just had to say that briefly because it's like I personally, I don't know about you, Phil. Are you just really mad that you can't smoke Delta 8 anymore because of this, the potential of this bill or something? Like, I don't think that's where we're coming from. I wanted to just clarify that, you know?
Oh, yeah. No,
This
no.
is
I
like
just don't
purely
think
about
there's
war
any
on
point in
drugs.
banning it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
banning it. Yeah. So.
I know some people, especially middle-aged and getting older, who prefer Delta 8 because it just doesn't hit them the same way as Delta 9 does. Like a lot of people say, oh, I'll smoke something with THCA or from the
Well,
dispensary, and
or like THCV is like a popular new one.
that
Like, I don't
one,
use that either, but you know, people should be able to use it.
Yeah, and that one again, that's one that I would argue is not intoxicating at all. Like there doesn't seem to be any high from it.
Interesting.
And it would still under this legislation be considered THC because it has the letters THC in it. Anything that has the letters THC is now con considered marijuana with this law, with this bill, I should say. It's not a law. But anyway, yeah. So on the screen, this one, just to quickly wrap this one up, this one explains that Delta 8 is all good. And this one explains to Mr. Rod Kite, no less, that in 23, that t the confusion is THCO. So do not occur naturally in the cannabis plant and only can be obtained synthetically and therefore do not fall under the definition of hemp. So, you know, pretty clear black and white night and day here. Delta THCO is not a naturally occurring thing. It's a controlled substance. Delta 8, however, because it's natural in the hemp plant, good to go. So, and this is the DA. This is the same guy wrote both letters. He's still there. He's still doing this. So when people like Chris Lindsay or anyone else say, you know, like the author of the Tribune article say that the DEA, you know, anytime they bring up those three big letters DEA when we talk about cannabis, everybody sort of gets a little anxious. And it the DEA, in my experience throughout this whole journey since 2018, the DEA is like, we don't want nothing to do with this man. We can see that the law says what it says, and we know the way it's written right now. Sorry, we can't do anything. And that's the way it should be. And that's the way it was intended. Like we talked about all the way back at the definition of hemp. That was, you know, Mitch McConnell was like, for everything that everybody complains about Mitch, man, he did us a solid when he pushed hemp through the way he did.
Yeah, it's funny because I was just in Southern Illinois on the way back from the eclipse, and I've got a video maybe I'll share. These kids were walking through the parking lot. This is totally just a random tangent. And I said, "Hey, you guys want to smoke a joint?" Because they seemed cool. They said hi to me and they said I had a nice bike or whatever. So I was like, "You guys want to smoke a joint?" We did, and they were like, "What do you?" They showed me their wristband. They're like, "What do you think about Trump?" And I was like, "You know, not really into him." And he's like, buddy, it was just interesting to hear in just these two random people. They're like, buddy, legalized weed, man. And I was like, I'll give him that. I don't think he knew he was doing that, but I'll give him that one. You'll get that out of me. You know, that's the one point he gets. So anyway, sorry, I just had to, it was just funny to, like, I did not expect that. I expect to be the one to bring that up. Never has it been brought up on me. You know what I mean? Like, so anyways, just a kind of a funny story. I literally have, unless you have some points, other points that you know you wanted to make that we haven't addressed, I have a couple of questions that I definitely want to close with, but I wanted to give you space. Was there anything like any bases that we didn't touch today? Because there was a lot said in that press conference, and I want to reiterate that if you'd like to see what was said, because we just played a few clips today, folks. I produced a transcript on thecolewemo.com. I'll have it linked in the podcast description. So.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was really helpful to have that transcript available so quickly. So nice job. And yeah, I mean, there's so much, right? I've been working really hard the last week on all of this because we have our lobby day coming up and because all of this developments. And so yeah, I've reviewed a 80-page bill in its entirety. I reviewed that research paper. I've gone through and done deep research on all these news articles and On top of that, just preparing talking points and positions. So my head is kind of like just completely overflowing with information. So I'm sure I forgot something, but I I'm happy to take the questions now. We've been going for like an hour and a half, and I could keep going, man. That's what I love about this, and that's why I still do this. But yeah, I'm happy to take the questions.
So this, I don't even know if we need to really devote a lot of time to this first one. I wanted to ask, is this about by design? Because it seemed like last time, I don't know if you've ever seen like dogs play tug of war, but I feel like they're throwing like a bone out, and then these two groups are like seemingly fighting over something, and then they just like pass through what they actually need to be done in the dead of the night, which might be like a cannabis agency, for example, which you all of a sudden you hear no talk about, but they were hoping it would be done this legislative session. I just wonder if something like that gets snuck through at the end of the night. But again, I don't know if we need to devote so much time to, because it's almost like a speculation question, you know, is this by design?
Well, what do you mean by like cannabis agency?
Well, there's this debate about, you know, in the past, the cannabis regulation oversight has said they wanted a commission. Now they say they want an agency. In the past, CBAI said they want a commission. But now that somebody from the CROO is in CBAI, I wonder all of a sudden if they want an agency and if maybe they just be quiet about that and push it through in the middle of the night, like they did with 280E and getting money out of the medical cannabis fund. Because, like, why be loud about things when you can just be quiet and pass it through in the dead of the night?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that come through again. But
they were loud about hemp last time, is my point. And then they did this. So you get everybody to, like, whoa, and then you just do what you actually want. You know. But anyway, it's kind of a speculative question.
Well, we've seen that tactic before where you try to pass something by introducing a bill. What do they call it? It's like you hot swap the bill. It's like you introduce a bill that's like about insurance, and then it gets read twice, and then they amend the entire bill. And then they pass it, like you said, in the middle of the night. But yeah, I mean, I do remember hearing about the agency thing, like, because there's so many agencies that are mandated by the CRTA to like regulate some aspect of it. They're like, let's create some umbrella agency that's all they do. And maybe, yeah, it could be that they're still pushing for that and they just want to bring hemp under that. But again, I would say, you know, hemp businesses, like, that's another thing I haven't really mentioned. So I'm glad you brought this up actually. Hemp businesses, are still businesses. They're still subject to all laws that every other business that sells consumable things is subject to. So we have consumer protection safety laws. We have the Illinois Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. If someone is selling a misbranded product, like, there are rules about what, you know, what a product can and can't do and what it needs to do. So these people that are selling products with no ingredients on them, they're already in violation of state law and federal law. And there are civil and criminal penalties in these on the books acts. Many of them have been on the books for, you know, the what is it? The consumer protection safety laws have been around for at least 50 years. And misbranded products can still get you in trouble, even if they are hemp or whatever, anything. It's a product that you're selling to people. Like, it's not like you can say like, oh, this is something new. Like, it's in a bag next to everything else that's been all subject to the same laws. It's like, you're a registered business, you're selling things to people. If it's misbranded, you're in trouble. Like, that's a real thing that already exists. We don't need a new agency to be snuck in to just grow bureaucracy and soak up tax dollars. Like, this is, there's no reason for that.
Yeah. And I guess my last question is, it kind of, you know, I like to ask this. I've been asking it to the advocacy groups, but I don't know if I've ever asked it to you. This issue is clearly not going away. It's been on their legislative priorities for the last, I guess, 4 or 5 sessions now. I think it's getting up to that point. Like, since we legalized it, they're like, hemp has got to go, just about roughly. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's not much to it, and maybe the strategy is always the same, but I always just like to ask, this isn't going away. So, like, is it just always keeping your eyes on it? Or is there, like, is there some middle ground we can make? Is this, I don't know even really what my question is. It's just, it seems like a zombie you shoot it and it gets back up, you know?
Yeah. Well, the question is, how do you deal with it, right? Like, how do you exist? Because, like, we sit and we talk about this all the time. It's like, why is this taking up so much of our time? And I think right. that's another thing that we want to iterate in our lobby day next week is, have you ever been inconvenienced by something cannabis related when it comes to legislation? Have you ever been stuck in a committee for hours and hours late into the night trying to vote on some stuff like you could barely understand because it's all Delta THCOV LMNOP? Well, you know, if this bill goes through, you are going to have a hell of a lot more of that. So I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoy like sitting and working really hard on stuff that is completely pointless and complicated, because you are going to get a hell of a lot more of that if something like this goes through. But I mean, what I'll say is like, yeah, basically like what you said, you keep an eye on it. Like we would prefer not to have to spend so much time discussing cannabinoids. But at throughout our time keeping an eye on it, this one seems like a pretty significant thrust in that not only is it sponsored by, you know, the Senate Majority Leader, but also it is probably the most restrictive. It's probably like it's the one that goes the farthest as far as like flipping the industry dynamic. And what the overall strategy, maybe you're right. Maybe it's bring out something extreme and then kind of back down and compromise with some amendments, or back down and compromise with something new coming out of the House, or something separate coming out of the Senate. But all I can say is, you know, it's based for doing this for years, like we've managed to time it out pretty damn good. We timed it out to where like this bill came out this week, and literally the following week we are in the Capitol discussing exactly things like this. So that's how we deal with it, is we just sort of you get used to it, and you just figure, okay, I'm going to be committing some time to it. Let's plan out when's the best time.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, Phil, you got anything before we go? Cool. All right. Well, I just want to thank you both for all of your time this morning. It's Wednesday, right? Because I'm going to drop this episode right away. So, folks, if you're able, Wednesday the 17th is your lobby day, right, Chris?
That's right.
Yeah, I guess if you're able to support, I'm sure we can link a call to action or some information in the podcast to join. So,
yeah, at this point, you know, reservations are not available anymore.
Oh, okay, cool.
So if people want to support us, we will have some actions that you can take following the event. Cool. And yeah, you'll see content and communications coming off of that, or during. You know, there'll be plenty of content coming from that. But yeah, we'll organize with our broader audience after the event. So yeah, don't just show up to the Capitol on Wednesday and be like, we're here with the hemp growers. Cause like, this is a very organized and scheduled event. And we need, yeah, we have like parties, teams of people that are like, you know, we've already grouped people to, this is your, we've scheduled by the half hour for the whole day. So like, yeah, at this point, yeah, please don't just show up and say you're with the hemp growers.
Sweet. Well, again, I just want to, thank you for joining me. And I just want to remind folks that I'm pretty agnostic about this issue. It really is, if you just keep it in the pocket and remember what we started this whole conversation about, and I'm talking about the conversation about drugs, it's that bans don't work and you have to bring it above board. If you have any concerns about it, you can't push it. You just can't push it into the shadows, because then you will never have your concerns. Yeah, you just can't make any conclusions based off of things that are in the shadows. So on that note, folks, thank you for tuning in. If you're still listening, thank you so much. And we'll see you on the next episode of The Cole Memo. Take care.